The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, happy Friday. Trying to get everything set here. All right, we're ready to go on this Friday night, December the 14th. And it's 2 weeks to go and we're out of here, 2019. Back tonight for part two, our two brothers, Brett and Mark. And they were here, 3 weeks ago, something like that, on November 30th. And we had a wonderful visit with them. They have both a lot of extraordinary things to share. We didn't get to spend as much time as I'd like with Brett, so they're both back this evening. Let me find out if they're there. Mark, are you there? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I am here, Jeff.
Good. And Brett?
Yes, good evening, Jeff.
Very good. Brett, you need to talk just a little bit louder or we'll bring you up a little bit. You guys...
Okay, let's see. One, two, one, two.
That's good. That's good. All
okay.
Right, we're there. Are you in the same location?
Yes,
we are.
Okay, all right, good, very good. Now, for those of you who can, go back and listen to the first part. It's well worth your time. Mark has had some astounding experiences, and Brett didn't get a chance to spend a lot of time on his. We're going to do that tonight and hear more. Now, I just got two pictures from Mark a little while ago. I cannot get them posted quickly enough for this discussion, but we can go ahead and talk about them because in a few hours they will be posted. So we might want to do that and just have people go back and take a look at the pictures. Mark, you sent the pictures. Are they yours?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Let's do that first so everyone can remember when they go look at the pictures what they're all about more easily. What's the story behind? What they are showing two windows and two handprints on the glass. Now, the problem with the handprints is they're only three fingers. All right? You get the picture. It looks very much like an E.T. hand, long, thin. So tell us about these pictures. How did you come by them and when did they happen?
Well, these pictures these prints probably showed up in the 2000 to 2002 period. I didn't keep very good records, unfortunately, but this handprint, the one with the three fingers, appeared a little bit after my encounter with that we talked about last week with the gray head coming up over my bed.
Right. And that's not your long that's after that, that's this, your window, I assume.
Yes, it's my bedroom window,
uh-huh.
And it's very hard to get a picture of this print. But I finally settled for this one, which at least shows the three fingers of even length.
Yeah.
And the palm, you can see part of the palm there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can tell, but off to the right of the picture, I have a little scale thing where it says my hand length, 7 1/4 inches.
Uh-huh.
And then this little hand is about 5 1/2 inches.
It's a little hand, yeah.
Yeah, so it's smaller than my hand. It's not like super small, but it is smaller.
Which side of the glass is it on?
It is on the inside.
Really? Now that's interesting.
Yeah. And I was thinking if it had been on the outside, the little guy would have had to be hovering in the air 6 stories up.
Mm-hmm.
And put it on the outside, and of course that would be astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
But it, on the inside, that's also astonishing because, you know, somehow he got in my room without me letting him in the front door.
Right.
And managed to put a print there.
Now the other print, is that a different print entirely, or is just a different angle in the daytime instead of a nighttime chart?
No,
it looks like
a different print entirely.
Yeah.
And you can see that, you can see off to the right, there's, looks like a thumbprint.
You know what that looks like? It almost looks like a small fat child with sunglasses in the window across the way. And
I
a white t-shirt.
Yeah. Right.
I couldn't figure that out. Now, okay.
Yeah, I think it's a thumbprint, like he had his thumb way spread out, you know.
Yeah.
And then you get a little bit of the palm there. And then you have three fingers, but the one middle finger seems to be bent. Look how it bends to the left there.
Suggesting it's not, the entire hand is not flat up against the window. That finger was...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's something a little funny there. And this this print, although I don't have a scale on it, it was also smaller than my hand. But
and
it looks more human-like than the other one.
Where did this second print show up?
This second print was also on my bedroom window at another time, probably, I'm going to say a couple months later than the other one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How old were you again for our audience when these two prints showed up?
I was in my 40s. Okay. I'm 61 now.
Right. So you're not playing games. I got you. I just want to make sure that everybody understands. These just showed up. And
yeah.
Were there apparent encounters tied to each instance of a handprint showing up on your windows?
Well, the encounter I had with the gray, actually I had two encounters with the gray, but the one that I told on the show last time took place about a couple months before this three-fingered handprint showed up.
Very good. All right.
Yeah.
Did you... I don't even want to think about this. Did you muster up the courage to wipe them off at some point, or did you just
I left them there for quite some time.
I'll bet you did, yeah.
I did, because I kind of marveled at them, and I thought, I don't know, I just couldn't bring myself to wipe them off right away.
Sure.
But did I did eventually wipe them off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cleaned the windows. Where I lived, they had... apartment inspections every so often, and I had to clean everything up, so I cleaned the windows and started
over.
Wait a minute.
You're living in an apartment, and they actually came around and checked your windows to see if they were clean?
Yes, they did. It was a subsidized apartment building, and they had lots of rules, you know.
That's ridiculous.
I
could see a filthy window being a problem, but... You don't strike me as the type of person to have a dirty house. This is ridiculous.
Well, I wasn't
dumb.
Too bad. I wasn't a total slob, but I was a little bit messy.
No, the word is comfortable, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, comfortable. And it's like my comfortable desk I'm sitting at now. It's got papers all over the place, but it's organized chaos. I know where everything is. You know?
All right, very good. Okay, anything else you want to add about the handprints? Did you bring anybody in and show them and... Or did you take a chance and just leave them as they were and not talk about it?
Well, you know, I didn't show anybody those handprints. I told my brother about them, of course, and he was in Virginia at the time, and I had cleaned them off before he ever got over to visit me, but I did tell him about it, and I managed to get those pictures.
Yeah, no, they're good pictures. Good job. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump over to Brett now. Brett, we have a lot of things that we won't get to them all, I'm sure, but why don't you just start where you'd like to start, and we'll walk through these together.
Oh, there's just so hard to pick, you know, if we go back a long ways or pick up, you know, we could talk about some recent experiences that we haven't covered.
Okay.
From previous shows.
Now, Brett, for our listeners, Brett is as many years as an airline pilot. Let's just leave it at that. All right.
Yeah, that's right. And out right now on a medical with a
right.
brain injury. Back, you know, when things really picked up with the UFO activity for me was after a visit to the Esetti Ranch, James Gilliland's place, at Mount Adams. And that would have been around, somewhere around 2002 or so.
Okay.
And I took my wife there. Because, you know, Mark and I were talking about UFOs a lot on the phone. Mark was having a lot of experiences. We had a lot to talk about, and there was no way to, I mean, my wife was exposed to all of this, but she hadn't seen anything.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, you know, if I could talk her into going out to the, you know, Esetti Ranch, and we're probably going to have some sightings out there, and then at least we'll be on the same page. So we went out there. It was October. She was pregnant with our first child. And we sat out, and James, I never met him. We were at his house, but, he was gone, and they had a house sitter that was handling things and people that came in, and we stayed the night. And we went out on a platform. They had this platform out in the field, and I don't know how many acres he has, but a lot. And, you know, it's out in the boonies. And so the sky watching was very excellent.
Were you wait, hold on. You just went up to the ranch on an invitation, even though he wasn't there, and kind of just helped yourself.
Yeah, we coordinated.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, we coordinated by phone. They had places, they had very, at the time, rather primitive little places where you could stay, you know, showers, and they gave you breakfast. And, you know, so it was arranged, and you paid for it. So we spent one night there. It was so interesting when I went in his house, but that's another story. It was like literally walking into the house of my brother or a cosmic brother. His bookshelf was lined with books that I had. It was very interesting. Pictures of Babaji, UFOs.
Uh-huh.
It was very interesting. But so, you know, we went out there and they signaled the ships in with a laser. And it didn't take long before they showed up over our head, and we watched the ships fly around doing crazy maneuvers at pretty high altitude for several hours until it was so cold we just really couldn't stay out any longer.
Let me ask you. Hold on.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Mm.
You signaled them in with lasers. How did they do this? Do they have industrial grade lasers that would really put out a beam? Is that what?
Oh no!
Hearing?
Like even a strong. No, it doesn't take anything fancy. You can go to Lowe's or whatever and
uh-huh.
get a, you know, one of those million candle power flashlights.
Yeah.
Work fine.
Yeah.
That was a way that they had been signaling the group that they wanted to bring in that they have an agreement with, in some type of an agreement with, out there. They, you know, they signal them that way. At least they did when I was there.
Hmm.
And, you know, because they can see the light and they're aware of the Esetti Ranch and the people that are interested in knowing more. And so I was told that the beings that showed up and were flying the anti-grav ships over our head were humans that were not from here, however.
All right. What did the craft, now this is night, what did the craft look like? to you?
Oh, just no, there's no description. No, you couldn't. They were high altitude.
They're dots of light.
Yeah, dots of light, but maneuvering in very unusual manners, and that's how they displayed, that's how they presented themselves, so you knew it wasn't an airplane.
I understand.
As
a pilot, you knew you had a guess about altitude. What would that guess be? 20,000 feet, something like that?
When you're talking about those altitudes, you really can't guess about it because you don't know the ship size, and it's a wild guess at best. And being a pilot doesn't really make it any more accurate.
Right.
I would say that these were 25,000, 35,000 feet. They were up there. That would be my instinct about it.
Uh-huh. Okay. In other words,
but I could be completely wrong.
Yeah. They weren't 500 feet up. They're way up there.
No.
And if they're
way up there,
if they're a dot of light at 25 or 30,000 feet, that might make them 50, 100 feet in diameter. We don't know. That's up there.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And it's possible that size isn't really part of the equation.
Right.
Because we can get to that later, but some of the ships that we've seen, and my brother and I have talked a lot about this, but it's not something that's easy to describe to people.
Uh-huh.
But light may not, some of these ships are light. They really are light. And when they come down low, they're literally like stars that are floating in the atmosphere at 3,000 feet. Like, they look just like a star. And sometimes when they're higher, they look exactly the same as they do when they're lower. And it's occurred to us that the size may not be really the right question when you're observing these things, because they're really not from this dimension.
Got it. Understand.
Yeah,
we've been to that area of conversation over the years before, and I do understand what you're saying. Now, you were there. How many of these things were up there flying around in response to the lasers that were used to attract them?
I think we saw maybe three ships maneuvering, making figure eights, just wildly maneuvering in ways that an airplane would not move.
And this lasted for hours.
Hours, yeah. As long as we wanted to stay out, it seemed like they were going to be there.
How interesting. I've got to ask this. I don't know that you have the answer, but what kind of an agreement was made with these visitors to come back or respond to laser light? Do you have any more information about that without violating any confidences?
No, there wasn't anything confidential. I can only tell you what I vaguely remember and what the gentleman, he was from Ireland that was watching the house. I do not remember his name. This was a long time ago.
All right.
James has had contact with lots of extraterrestrials, and he's a pretty high-profile guy if you know about him.
I was the first person to put him on radio.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so you know about James. James apparently, has communicated directly with these beings. And, and so they present themselves to those that are ready and those that are open-hearted that come out to the ranch. Now, there are people that come out to that ranch, and they could stay there a week, and the ships will not come and show themselves to those people. And it has something to do with the mental spiritual coefficient of the individual. They scan you. Mm-hmm. There has to be an openness and a willingness to want to know more. You don't have to believe, but you have to be open.
Very good. Okay. All right. Understood. All right. Onward.
So, so when we left that, the ranch and flew back to Charlottesville, when we got to Charlottesville, I remember
you flew
it was
all the way,
time.
Excuse me, you flew all the way across country to do this.
Yeah, well, I don't remember if we might have combined the trip with, visiting out there because I have relatives out west.
Okay.
But I don't really remember the details of that at this time. I don't know that we were out there just for that. I think we worked that into a trip that was out, took us out there. Yeah.
You were visiting me at the time, brother.
Oh, you were visiting Brother Mark. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we detoured down, and I took Grace down to the ranch.
Uh-huh. All right, very
so,
good.
So we came, we flew back, you know, landed in Charlottesville. I remember walking, we were walking out to the employee lot where my car was. And of course, once you have sightings like that, you know, you're always looking up.
So it really,
you just find yourself, you're gazing up, looking around, analyzing what's moving in the sky. And we walking out to the car, we saw a ship going over the top of the airport. Not an airplane, not a satellite, you know, it was a ship.
How did it present?
No, okay.
Was it another light, a dot of light? Was it a little, did it have shape? What did you see?
Oh, this one was lower. This was more of your amber, the amber bottom, most likely a disc. You're looking at the bottom of them,
okay.
Something to do with the gravity well generators creating an amber hue around the bottom of the ship.
We sometimes call that plasma for the listeners, too. Whatever.
Okay.
It's an energy field
okay.
of sorts.
An energy field, yeah. And they kind of glow, you know, dimly. And this was, of course, you know, much lower than what we saw out at the ranch.
Yeah. Well, exciting. Very nice. Excuse me again.
It
had to be on airport radar. If it was radar reflective, it would have been.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But how these guys protrude into our reality and how they leave, you know, and there's so many different types of ships at different frequency levels, you know, not one thing explains, you know, some of these ships are completely unaffected by any of that.
Got it.
And depending on their densities and where they're from.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of variables there. But this was in, so anyway, we got home that night, you know, and I don't remember the details of the evening, but I remember Grace was exhausted. She had crawled in the bed. She was sitting up in the bed reading. And I was still amped up from the trip and everything. And I went out into the back porch and another ship came right over the treetop level in the backyard.
All right, and you're talking about rock-throwing height here.
Yeah, I'm talking about right over the top of the trees, yeah.
And what did we see? What did it look like?
Well, this one, I can only tell you what I sensed and what I saw, but what I saw was a fairly small craft, a disc that was sort of fat. It did have lights on it. I don't remember color with the lights. It wasn't large, perhaps 10 feet across, 12 feet maybe. The sense that it may not be manned.
Uh-huh.
That was my sense, but I don't know. But that was my sense that this was
It was a disc.
A drone. It was a disc of sorts, yes.
And flying.
Just stationary.
Oh, it was hovering.
Yeah, just sitting back over the trees. And I remember being very excited, you know, Grace, here's another one, you know. I mean, we've been seeing a lot of ships. And it was like, here's another one. They're like, they followed us back here. And she wouldn't even get out of bed. She was on overload at that point.
So how long did this hover over the treetops, Brett?
I don't remember that it was there very long.
The seconds or minutes?
I came back, you know, to get her,
uh-huh.
Came back out. It was there. We talked a little bit back and forth. And at some point, it was gone.
She was overloaded. That's wild.
Oh, she was overloaded. Well, because this sort of thing strains people's paradigms, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Understood.
You have to adjust to it, you know. And it was a lot in the last, whatever, the 48 hours, you know, she got bombarded. So after that, there was, for a period, I can't say exactly how long, 2-3 years, I'm not sure, where we had a lot of sightings out in Virginia after that. With the children sometimes with her and I alone, she would see them sometimes alone. Of course, I would see them alone too. This went on, and this is where I started documenting the time. I did film, but I did very little filming. Mark did a lot of filming. I did a lot of time documenting because I started seeing a time coincidence with the sightings. and the time on the sightings equated to 11s and 1s all the time.
Give me an example.
So like you would, if you had a digital clock, and it would be 6:05. And 5 is 11.
Right.
So in numerology, you know, you add them, and you look at those numbers, and 11s would pop up over and over and over again with the sightings, to the point where it became obvious, back when I was documenting those things, it became obvious that there was a message in the numbers.
You're saying that over the next couple of years, several years, you saw, what, dozens of things?
Oh, I would say dozens, yes.
That's quite extraordinary. They did follow you home, didn't they?
Well, they followed us home, but then we started realizing that, you know, we could call them in, and that certain types of, and you know, there's a lot to talk about here, but there was different types of ships, but the Starcraft, what we ended up calling them eventually, were these star ships made of light that would come in, and that you could, you know, you could, like, you would send a prayer, you rouse it in your heart, you send it through your third eye, that's your transmitter. The yogis teach that. And that's how you transmit out into the universe. Well, when you transmit, just like you do in prayer, these beings are receptive to that.
Well, thoughts are energy, and they're sensitive
energy,
to that energy, and they pick it up. So they come down in one form or another. Dozens of encounters, so to speak, and
over time, yes,
different kinds of craft, the disc over the trees, the lights above, the light craft. What else? What other kinds of things?
Well, even more peculiar things, but I've seen a lot fewer of the really peculiar things.
We like peculiar. Tell me.
You do? Okay. Well, there's a couple of sightings that, you know, one was at my home, and another one was up flying in the Northeast somewhere, possibly, I'm not, you know, upstate New York or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that, there was a couple of summers that I spent a lot of time standing outside, when I was having a lot of sightings, because it always yielded results. And all you had to do is avail yourself, open yourself, and present yourself to, you know, to the cosmos and to the beings. And if you did that and you stood your ground for a while, they would come in and you would see ships and you would see sightings. Of course, you'd see all the normal stuff too, the airliners, the helicopters, the, you know, but you would have, the ships would come in. And this one evening I was standing out, and I did this, you know, for hours at times. But this only happened for like 2 summers where I did this. But this one time I was standing out there, and there was some activity that night. It was amazing. But all of a sudden, this, I don't even know how to explain it, but like in the Matrix where they show a guy shooting a gun and you see the shockwave of the bullet, and they film that shockwave where the bullet's going through the air. Well, if you can imagine that in magenta, like a red color, and about, 18 inches across, and imagine it not being a physical object, but more of an energetic object, it went flying right over my head, right across the top of the house.
With these waves in front of it, so to speak?
No, behind it.
Behind it, rather.
Behind it, yeah.
So a magenta, energetic object, not necessarily a piece of metal, and behind it are these what did the waves look like again, and how many were there? I'm trying to get a mental picture here.
They were, you know, because the object was kind of like an energetic bullet.
All right.
Like a large one. And so the shock waves behind it were, you know, like concentric. They were circular.
Okay. Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
And it left a trail of those behind it. How many? How far? A long ways?
No, not a long ways. Like immediately behind it. It went fairly rapidly. Let me think. Maybe it would have been maybe a 3-second sighting.
And it went, this is daytime, nighttime.
Nighttime.
And it went from where to where in your field of vision?
it went from basically, it went from northeast to southwest.
And
across
you had...
across the corner of my house.
Wow. That's,
and
that
virtually
is,
over
that,
my head.
That is
very
peculiar.
Close. I mean, it,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, it didn't miss the house by 20 feet.
And, okay.
Very
estimated,
peculiar.
Estimated speed?
Oh, not super fast.
Just moseying along?
It'd be hard to say. Let's see. No, it wasn't going slow. I mean, it was fast, but it wasn't. Let me just think about.
These are tough questions. I'm just trying to get a better idea.
20,
in my head.
30 miles an hour,
that's
something
fine.
Like that.
Yeah, that's fine. That works. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So must have been quite pretty. Magenta. And were the call them shock waves or propulsion waves, whatever. Were they the same color as the energetic object leading the way?
They were. Yeah. And,
right.
and I would say it did not appear to be physical in any terms that I would understand.
Okay. Now,
it was not, energetic.
Last question. Did the energy waves behind it fade away and then become replaced with new ones coming off of the energetic object? Or did they stay fixed?
No, they didn't stay fixed. They faded as the object moved.
Uh-huh.
And it would be like they followed it behind it, kind of like you see a vapor trail going behind a jet.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Like
so
that.
New ones would appear as the old ones would fade off.
Right.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Well, see, what happens with these things, and Mark and I were talking about this tonight, is that one of the big one of the things that happens with all these sightings that we sometimes fail to talk about is that the biggest thing with all these sightings and all the peculiarity with it is that it forces you into a position where you realize that, your previous version of reality doesn't fit what you're observing. And reality is much larger and much greater than anything you could have imagined.
It's beyond our ability to imagine. Thank you. It is.
And they drive it home when they fly over your house with a red bullet like that. It's like, what was that? what was that? how do you explain that to somebody? I have no idea what that is. Is it a being? Is it a ship? Is it a technology? I mean, what is it? It obviously is coming down to say hi.
Well, they like you. There's an affinity there of some kind. You
Something's
have been,
going on.
No, you've been, you both have been selected. No question. I did once see very high up what looked like a little white satellite moving. And then it stopped, and then it went in a different direction. And that was interesting to me. You've seen too many of those to count. They're
no,
up
but
there.
But that's a sure sign. Yeah, that's when you know it's not a satellite.
That's right. That's right. All right. Very interesting, to put it mildly. Go ahead. Continue. These are good. Very good.
Well, there was another time I was flying with a first officer, a young man that... I don't remember his name. I just remember that I really liked him. He was a really nice kid. He ended up going to work for another company flying RJs, and he was just really nice. So we were flying up in the Northeast one night,
For our listeners, may I just jump in here and remind everyone
sure.
that Brett was and still is a commercial airline pilot, and we'll leave it right there, okay? All right, so you're flying a commercial run, and you're talking about someone, your first officer, okay.
Yeah, the first officer, and, we're talking about somehow I wouldn't talk about this with everyone, but with certainly people that were open, and I would test the water with them sometimes, and make a decision, but him and I got into a good conversation about this sort of thing, and he was listening to some of the things I had to say about this, and And I was trying to explain to him that one of the things that these beings do is they present themselves in such a way that, that they shock your understanding of things. And that's in that it almost looks like a technique to break you into a larger version of, just a larger paradigm. And while we were talking about this, and I was explaining various sightings, and the unusual stuff that they would do and how you couldn't explain it with physics. And while we're talking about that, we're looking out the window And right about our altitude, I would say within, 500 to 1,000 feet of our altitude, maybe 5 miles out in front of us, all of a sudden it would be, if you can imagine a ship that's floating out there, okay, a ship that you can't see that's cloaked, and imagine it has like trap doors that it can open up where they incinerate their waste so they can light it on fire to get rid of the waste to get it out of their ship. It never hits the ground because they heat it up so hot, they open the door, they drop the waste out while it's burning, and it never hits the ground. If you can imagine not being able to see that ship, but you can imagine the ship doing just that, that's exactly what we saw.
So do you see a door open and light coming out and then the discharge, or do you just see the discharge coming out of the blackness?
Yeah, you don't see any door. The door is imaginary, but it would be, but the signature of the way the fire came out of a flat area and dumped with the gravitational field dumped down a huge ball of fire that was flat on one end and then just fell like out of, it didn't come from outer space. It came from right in front of us, just appeared in the sky, bang, incinerated and just dissipated while we were talking about this subject.
That's really a good description of something that's indescribable. How many releases or discharges were there?
No, just the one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did the first officer say?
Oh, I mean, we looked at each other. I hit him, you know, I was like, there you go. That's the craziest thing. We're talking about it, and bang, they show up and do something like that. I was like, that's what I was trying to tell you.
Okay.
Be ready for that when you open yourself up.
Set the stage again. You and he are in the cockpit flying. You've got your commercial pilot. You're at what altitude approximately?
Oh, there's no way I could even tell you
okay.
that.
Okay. And it's...
below 20,000 feet.
It's dark, and this occurs in front of you, what, several miles away, we're guessing? Five?
I would say, it's 3 to 5, no more than that.
In other words, it was close enough that you could actually, your eye could pick up some detail of the material that had been ignited and ejected. You could see.
It was a large ball of fire. Yeah, large. It didn't come from above. It came from our altitude.
I understand.
Just appeared literally out of black. Just bang! All of a sudden, it was in front of us.
And
yeah, it was wild.
How far down did it fall before it just went out?
Halfway
to the ground, or?
Goodness, no. You know, 1,500 feet, 2,000 feet, not far.
But enough to acquire it and make some crude mental calculation that this wasn't 10 feet. It wasn't all the way to the ground. Yeah, you're giving me 1,500, 2,000 feet. You were able to watch this and analyze what you're seeing.
Oh, yeah. And it's a ball of some kind of material was being incinerated.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a pile of old newspapers. It had to be something else.
If it was, it was a really big pile.
That's really amazing. So the size of this thing was bigger than what, an automobile size, perhaps? I'm just fishing here, but.
Oh, I would say that the ball of fire was easily 100 feet across.
Oh my. That must have been an enormous craft.
Yeah, likely, yeah. I mean, there's no way I can't prove this. My instincts were, the description that I gave you is exactly what my instincts were telling me. I just saw.
Well, I could ask for no more.
There was literally a ship.
That's good.
There was a ship cloaked. They were well aware of our conversation, and they decided to just do a little display. And I've seen this happen over and over again, but not that in that remarkable a way. That was a really unusual. I've never seen anything like that since either. That was a one-time event.
Was it dead ahead, port starboard?
Just slightly to the right. So about the 1 o'clock position off the nose.
Oh, well, the young man who was with you, how did he handle that afterward?
Well, it just sort of galvanized exactly what we were talking about. He was open to what we had saw, but we had to sit there, talk about it, think about it, and then I told him what I thought we just saw, in my opinion.
I've never heard anything like that before. That's a new one. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was wild.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Brett, you're on a roll here. Keep it up.
So, let me think. So, two summers ago, not this last one, but the one before it, I came out to where I am right now, which is out in Spokane at my mom's place, and Mark was here. And this was, let me think, this was summertime, and I spent a couple weeks out here. I spent 2 weeks out here. And don't know what month exactly, but it was hot. We had 100-degree days. So that much I remember. And it was, we've never had an experience like this, my brother and I, before this or after. Not to say it won't happen, but in 14 days, we had 14 StarCraft come over the house. And every single night we had one come. But we saw multiple ships on some nights, but we always had one StarCraft and other ships show up.
Did Mom see them? Any of them?
Mom saw them. And in fact, Mom even caught some of, like, maybe two or three of those ships before Mark or I did.
Were these doing theatrical presentations like at the ranch, or were they pretty much hovering and then moving off in a straight line? What was their attitude?
Yeah, the StarCraft, not always, but 9 times out of 10, they do a perfectly straight track trajectory right over the top of you, just maybe to one side slightly or to another. A lot of times they're going eastbound, but it's not always east. But more often than not, it's an eastbound trajectory.
Okay.
And you can, my brother's more intuitive than I am, more sensitive, I would say, more psychic than I am generally. And he can literally pick up the vibe from the ship at times. And and this is something I've observed him doing over the years too, with things that I thought were satellites. He'd say, no, this is a ship. Watch, and then it would show itself to be a ship.
The east.
He's always been right about it.
Okay, the west east trajectory. Let's take one as a template. Horizon to horizon, pretty much. When you pick them up?
Yeah, a lot of times. But it depends on sometimes they'll do a track. And the altitude can vary. And so sometimes it's really the low altitude displays are absolutely remarkable when they come down. And sometimes they'll be like, I'm guessing between 3,000 and 5,000 feet. It looks just like Venus dropped right into the atmosphere. Perfectly crystal ice clear white light that does not flicker at all, and it'll just track completely silently over your head, transmitting a vibration if you're sensitive enough to pick it up.
When it goes over your head, extend your arm. Tell me what would fit between your thumb and index finger to be about the size of this perfectly stable white light. A pea, a grain of rice, an olive, something bigger maybe, something smaller. What are we talking about? Stick your arm out. What would you have between your finger and thumb?
It would be, so you have like 5.5 inches there. If I extend out, 6 inches even. Sometimes the low altitude ones might appear as big of as an olive.
Oh, that's plenty big. Do they change their direction of travel at all, or is it pretty much a straight line east when they go east?
Well, yeah.
Hold on, Mark. Go ahead, finish up, Brett. Then I'll go to Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say when they track, when they're low altitude, I've never seen a low altitude one change its trajectory, but I've seen higher altitude ones changes their trajectory.
Okay. Well, an olive-sized light moving overhead and off to the east is pretty compelling stuff. Go ahead, Mark, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. Yeah, I just wanted to jump in there and say, yes, they do. They do change direction sometimes. They often will fade out, or sometimes a slow fade out into invisibility, or sometimes a fast fade out, and then sometimes they'll appear later, like they'll disappear for a while, then they'll appear further down the road later and become visible again.
Interesting.
So they're really good at just fading out or fading in, for that matter.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, you were there. You saw him with your brother and your mom.
Yeah, like he said, we haven't had that much activity in that span of time while we were together before or since.
Uh-huh. Did you call them down mentally, emotionally, or did you use a light?
Brett and I have both done that over the years many times, but... you can't always call them. Like, I can stand out there and stand out there all night and they won't show up. But other times I'll go out there or I'll call on them before I go outside and they'll show right up, you know.
This is amazing.
It's quite something. It's happened enough to know that, for Brett and I to know that they can pick up on our mental requests.
Well, they've got your frequencies. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, they've got our frequencies, yes.
Here's the conclusion that is certainly one that is accessible without too much trouble. This is a very, very busy destination, or maybe they live here. Maybe they have bases here. Maybe they're part and parcel of the biosphere, if we want to use that term, of the planet. Maybe they're here.
Yeah, you know, I think that the more I think about these things, I'll come up with three or four different scenarios like that, and I'll think to myself, it's probably all of the above, you know.
Well, why not? Who are we to exclude anything?
Some of them, I think, do live here, and some don't, you know, some are just visiting.
When you say starship, that brings to mind just kind of a reflex that, oh, he means a ship that has come from Alpha Centauri and it's coming straight down over his house. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the appearance of these objects, where they come from.
Right. They look like a very large star or planet.
Right.
And like Brett said, the light doesn't flicker at all like the lights on an airplane or anything. It's very perfectly still and steady. It appears to be what I would intuitively call a higher frequency kind of light than our electric light.
Oh, fascinating. Well, anything the size of a pea or an olive going overhead is certainly could be intimidating to people if they weren't ready for it. How did your mom handle it?
Some people can be kind of freaked out by that. And
yeah.
I've had people look at them with me that would turn their back on it or they couldn't actually see it. Like, you'd be seeing it, but they couldn't see it.
Denial.
And I don't know if it's their mind rejecting what they're seeing or exactly what's going on there.
What did Mom say? Is she pretty used to these things now?
Funny. Like, she'll get excited and say, oh, look, there's one. And then the next day, she'll say, I haven't seen one of those starcraft for a long time. And I go, Mom, you just saw one last night. So she gets excited when she sees them, and then she kind of edits that out of her mind, you know.
Interesting.
She does, yeah.
That's interesting. That is. Do the colors on these craft that you saw at Spokane, do they change or were they all the same color? And at any time, were there more than one? Were there more than one at a time?
Clear white light.
Okay. Were there more than one at a time ever?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Sometimes there's several. I saw one slow-moving one that was pretty low down, and then a small one appeared behind it and chased it, and then got up ahead of it, and then the big one sped up and got up ahead of that one. It's like they were playing a little game of racing game or something.
Leapfrog.
Yeah, that's, a little leapfrog.
That's funny. That's very interesting.
Yeah, they do some funny things sometimes.
Wow. Okay, coming up on our break here, so we have another hour to go. So while we take a little time off to digest this, figure out your itinerary, where we're going to go next. Anything to add to this, Mark? Brett's been doing a lot of talking this time around. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. The one thing I would that just pops in my mind now is back between 1998 and about 2004, I saw lots of daytime UFOs and videotaped some of them. But after 2004, it seemed like all of my sightings were of the StarCraft variety. I stopped seeing the daytime UFOs. I stopped seeing the other kinds of craft at nighttime. And all Brett and I have seen pretty much since then has been the StarCraft type.
Very good.
And I don't know why that would be. It's just that the StarCraft seems to have replaced the other sightings in our lives right now.
Now, we do have some daylight pictures up. If you look in guests, Brett and Mark, you'll see photos there. So you can take a look at those while we take our little break. And I do want to, again, notice the ads. Please notice the ads. These people care about this program and reality. These products, there aren't very many of them, but they are the best of the best on this planet, in my view. I take all of them. They are the best. All right, hold on. Back in a minute.